Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Thanks for joining us here. I had my first redo. I got about 10 minutes into a show, and it just was not going good. So I had to regroup, delete the previous recording, and then here we are again. So thank you for joining us here. July 15th. I hope everybody's doing well. Right in the dog days of summer, you could speak. I'm not going to say that. In Michigan here, it's been beautiful. 80 degrees. At night, it drops down to 65. You can have the windows open. It's been fantastic weather. We went out on the water this weekend. I had some birthday parties for two of my daughters. I had one on the 12th, one on the 13th. Eleanor turned 5. Esther turned 3. So it was good. It was good. Everybody's happy. I'm happy. One thing I wanted to talk about, and, you know, people... like it or not, I like talking about my personal life. Chicken update. Everybody's doing great. We're still stuck at 5. Actually, not so great. Two weeks ago, a fox got into the hen house and dragged one of the white ones out and killed it and ate it. So I refortified the gates. We had a big rain that came through, like a big thunderstorm. And a huge geyser gushed through the chicken run, and I didn't realize it until it was too late, but at the back of the coop, the little river of water pushed back the fence a little bit on the bottom. And so I think the fox dug, I know the fox went under that little hole, grabbed the chicken from the front of the run and dragged it all the way out that hole and into the woods, because you could see the trail of feathers. It's unfortunate. The thing was rock solid until that huge thunderstorm. We got like 5-6 inches of water in like 10-20 minutes. It was just a flash, just a boom of rain, and it was crazy. So yeah, we lost one, unfortunately, but we're moving the chicken coop over to the new house soon. My buddy came over with his tractor, and it just wasn't big enough for the job that we have. So we're going to, pivot and try to get some long fork tines, like a backhoe or whatever, to put underneath the coop and move it over to the new house. But anyways, chickens are doing good. They're laying. Everybody's happy. The birthday went well. I wanted some advice, you know, because I'm not perfect. I don't think anybody listening is perfect. I could be wrong. But I obviously, you know, I'm a father. I got 8 kids. If you didn't know, they're all girls. So, you know, it's a big responsibility. Having boys is a responsibility as well, but boys are independent. Boys, you can just leave up to their own devices and, you know, they'll figure it out. And I'm not saying girls aren't independent or not smart, because they are, but it's just different. You have a bigger responsibility when you have girls, I think, because they're going to go out and they're just going to be bombarded by all these men and boys and all these just society. So it's a big responsibility. I don't want to, you know, watch on YouTube one day and I see my daughter being interviewed on the street by some creep saying, "Oh, what's your this, what's your that?" I don't want that. You know, maybe I'm, call me old fashioned, but I just think they can do better. So anyways, going back to my fears and my need for advice. My oldest daughter's 13. And what happens when you become that age? You start to notice boys. And they've been noticing boys for a long time. My 11-year-old, my 9-year-olds. It's a topic of conversation at our house. And it's been that way for the last year or so. Well, now it's starting to become real, because my 13-year-old is at that age where it's like, well, maybe, you know, could I hang out with so-and-so? Can we do this and that with this boy? And it's an interesting time, because you have to set that precedent for her sisters, because the decision you make now will trickle down with every other kid, because they'll go, well, Ava got to do this, why can't I do it? And so now it's a big moment. And the thing that makes it more tricky for me is, you know, they homeschool, obviously. I think all of you know that. So they're not, you know, around boys that I don't know. Typically, when you're growing up, it's how I was. You would be around all these kids and all these girls, and your parents would have no clue, for the most part, who you're hanging out with or what you're doing at school. You'd go home, yeah, oh, everything's fine. They don't know who you're hanging out with or who you have a crush on or this, that, and the other. The difference in my family is I know who my girls are talking about. In Cedar, Michigan, where we go to church, we have a great community. All the families are typically homeschooled. And, you know, my wife is always out at the church. They're doing classes. They're doing this and that. They're always there. And so the boys are there too. And I'm there quite a bit too. And so I see X, Y, and Z, boy A, B, and C, that my kids talk about in the house. And they're giggling about and writing notes about and, you know, getting upset about, oh, don't tease me about such and such. Well, Ava now has, you know, developed a crush on a boy. And it just so happens that I'm around this kid quite a bit. And before I knew of the crush, I thought I liked the kid. Like, he was great. He was always respectful, still is respectful. Mr. Scott, how you doing, Mr. Scott? Do you need any help? Mr. Scott this, Mr. Scott that. I'm like, fantastic. Like, you're a good kid. I know his parents. I know his family. Great family. But I find myself, now that I know Ava, you know, has built this liking for this boy, I find myself, you know, puffing out the chest when I come into the room. And I'm just like giving him a little bit of an attitude. Like, you're trying to steal my daughter from me under my nose, right in front of me, kid. And he's like, he's a 13-year-old little boy and he's every bit 5'1", like 100 pounds. And I'm just like, what? And I go home, I'm like, what are we doing? Like, what am I doing? Trying to intimidate this little boy, not intimidate, like bumping into him. It's like, I can tell my interactions with them have changed a little bit. So I need some advice. Like, what do I do? What do I do? I'm around these boys all the time. My daughters obviously are just starting to go boy crazy, which is fine. I'm okay with that. But it's just like, boy, oh boy, I don't know. I did the math. I'll have at least 5 teenagers once my oldest gets to 19 for a good decade. Because then she'll be 20 and then they'll get bumped up. And then I think at one point I'll have 6 teenagers when my twins get to 19. So it's just, there's a lot and I need some help because I don't know, have all the answers. I'm trying my best. All right, moving on. The Connor Clifton interview. And I do read all the comments in YouTube and I do get lots of emails. So I appreciate the feedback. I thought it was great. I didn't know what to expect. I talked to Connor in Buffalo this year when I did a little Sabres event, and a very calm, cool and collected guy, just very low key. And you never know how that's going to kind of translate to an interview. Because that doesn't, those types of personalities are hard to enjoy sometimes. And this is just my perspective, where it's just like he doesn't get too high, he doesn't get too low. You know, he doesn't put inflection on, you know, a lot of his words. He's very just monotone. But I think he had some great answers, great insight. He's obviously very aware of how lucky he is to be in the NHL. He worked his tail off to get there and he's continued to do that. So big, big year for him. He needs to have a good season. Contract year, going to Pittsburgh, going to be an interesting environment. Sidney Crosby rumors are swirling. Is he going to go to Montreal? Will he finish his tenure in the Pittsburgh Penguins jersey? Who knows? But he'll have an opportunity because that team is going to be atrocious. Coming from Buffalo, you would want to go to a better franchise. But it is what it is. He gets dealt. He's going to Pittsburgh. It was a great interview. I'm glad he was here. Please keep giving me feedback. I'm going to keep doing interviews. I got Michael Haley coming on Thursday. Former tough guy for the New York Islanders, San Jose Sharks, Florida Panthers. One of the good characters of the game. He was the guy who, with Trevor Gillies, was in that big brawl with the Penguins. Remember they fought, the goalies fought, and he went after some goalie, and it was just like a huge debacle. I'm going to talk to him about that, among other things. So stay tuned for that on Thursday. But anyways, for this show, I did the Carolina Hurricanes deep dive last week. Well-received. Everybody else wanted more deep dives, and I enjoy doing them. It's fun to go back and do a little research and figure out, how did we get here? Where did we go wrong? And so for today, I'm going to do one of my alma maters, the San Jose Sharks. You know, I loved my time in San Jose. Made a lot of good friends there. I was just texting with Joe Pavelski yesterday, congratulating him on the big Pro-Am win out in California this past weekend, I should say. You know, I text with Joe Thornton all the time. I'm buddies with these guys. Even though I was there for 1 year, I feel like I really loved being there. And it's funny, gosh, and this is a whole other podcast for a whole other day, but just the culture of teams and how it's so easy to ruin a culture and it's so hard to build it. But once you have it, you can tell. And Connor was talking about that in Boston, just how it's a rock solid culture. And it's based on the people you bring in. And San Jose had that. They had great people on this team and a part of this franchise. And that's why they were so successful. And I'm not looking at the whole tenure of this franchise. I'm going to look back maybe at the last 20, 25 years of this franchise. Because, gosh, you know, from the early 2000s, I'll go back to 1997. Because that's when they started really their, I don't want to say dynasty, because they did not win any Stanley Cups. But you'd be hard-pressed to say over the last 20, 5 years. So obviously taking out the last couple years because they've been just terrible in a rebuild. They were the model franchise. They made the playoffs 19 of 21 years from 97 to 2019. Like that's an incredible run. That's Detroit Red Wing-esque run where they, in the regular season, they were untouchable. I think we forget how dangerous this team was. They only made it to one Stanley Cup Finals. They lost to the St. Louis Blues 4-2. They made the conference finals four times in that span. It's a pretty good run. Five times making it to the conference finals in 20 years. That ain't bad. Obviously, no banners to show for it. They won the President's Trophy a bunch. They did everything they could to win the Stanley Cup. They were great at drafting during this time. And keep in mind, this is a small market team. San Jose is not one of the heavy hitters. They don't have a huge payroll. They don't have scouts all over the world. This is a small market team. When I went there, I was very much underwhelmed by the facilities. You know, you go to a city, you sign with a team, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. And you just hope for the best. And when I walk in, you know, on day one, it was a training rink. I was like, oh, this ain't that good. Like, it's just, it was very much scaled down from what I was used to in Chicago or Buffalo or the Rangers or those, you know, high value teams that pour a lot of money into their team. It was just, you know, not bare bones, but the bare necessities. If I can coin the Jungle Book, look for the bare necessities. So that's what it was. And it worked. What made this team so great was the GM, Doug Wilson, was awesome. I love Doug. The owner kept his nose out of things. We never saw the owner. All the staff that they had hired, everybody from the secretary, Rosemary, to all the equipment managers, to the trainers, everybody was top-notch. And they were super focused on what they were going to do, but they were also really personable. It was a good environment to be around. And then when you just have all of those pieces, success will eventually happen. And that's what happened. And their drafting was top tier. And I'm not talking about the first rounders, because it's easy to, you know, to hit on the draft when you have the number one overall pick. It's easy to hit when you draft the Patty Marleau number two overall or a Mark Edward Vlasic. I'm talking about the later round picks. They were great. You're getting guys like Pavelski and Braun and Ryan Clough and Torrey Mitchell and Tommy Wingles and Jason Demers and Douglas Murray and Samuelson and Chichu and all these guys, Scott Hannon. These are all later round picks who would go on to play thousands of games, be main contributors. Marcel Gotch, like Christian Ehrhoff. These are big time players who they picked later in the draft who would become huge pieces to this franchise, like key parts of each run in the quest for the Stanley Cup. And they were great at tradings too, and they were smart in free agency. This was just the epitome of a great franchise. And I think one of the main trades, because they were always good when they came into this league, they obviously struggled a little bit, but then they found their footing. You know, they get Owen Nolan, they had Artis Erbe, they were Mike Ricci, they were a good team. The thing that kind of put them over the top and the thing that really put the stamp as them as a legitimate franchise in the NHL was the trade they made in 2005 for Joe Thornton. Before that, they were good, but it was a case of, well, you know, they're a good team, but they're not going to be a contender. They don't have the assets. Players don't want to go there. But then Doug Wilson, he heard through the grapevine that Joe Thornton, the Boston Bruins, were not happy with him. And I heard this firsthand when I was there earlier this year. You know, maybe he wasn't taking things too serious. Things weren't going well. He wasn't playing Boston Bruins type hockey. You know, the number one overall pick, they expected more out of him. And so they're floating the idea of trading him, which is insane. You have a 6'5" centerman who has the hands that he has and the feet that he has and the passion for the game that he has. And you're thinking about trading him? I think he was 22, 23 at the time. Like, are you crazy? Those guys are unicorns. And when you get one, you hold on to him for as long as you can. So when Doug Wilson heard that Joe Thornton might potentially be on the market, he called right away. And they worked up a trade where he gave them three good prospects, three good NHL players, Wayne Primo, Brad Stewart, and Marco Sturm, current coach of the Bruins. And in return, you get Joe Thornton. you get arguably one of the best passers of all time in the NHL. A guy who'll go down as maybe top 20 NHL player all time. Hall of Famer. Just all around good guy. And what he brings off the ice, almost as important as on the ice. And I think that's where the Bruins really kind of soured on Joel, was off the ice stuff. I don't think they liked his, I don't want to call him shenanigans, but just him, his personality, his just happy-go-lucky, you know, the hockey is not the end-all be-all type attitude. Like, he worked his tail off, don't get me wrong. But the Bruins just didn't like that. That wasn't the big bad Bruins style. So that trade right there in 2005 was, I think, what put the stamp on the San Jose Sharks, saying, okay, we're not happy with where we are. We're a good team. We make the playoffs, but yeah, I want more. Because they were about 8 years in of making the playoffs. Like I said, 1997, they started making the playoffs. That was their run. This was 2005. They made this trade. So this is 6-7 years. And they said, we're tired of losing in the first round. We're not happy with maybe making the second round once or twice. We want more. So they traded for Jumbo Joe in 2005. And that's the moment when I think everybody said, oh, okay. Now we got to take these guys serious. And then the free agents started to come. And then the guys around the league started to go, well, maybe when we want to go to San Jose, maybe that's a good place to play. They got Joe Thornton. They got Patty Marleau. Yeah, let's go there. And then you're seeing, oh, here comes Brian Campbell. Here comes Billy Guerin. Here comes Danny Heatley, Kyle McLaren, Dan Boyle, Martin Havlat. That's when the free agents start to come. That's when things really, really picked up steam in San Jose. And you had to really, really take them serious. Like, this team might win the Stanley Cup. Like, look at that roster. It's top notch. And then they would dip their toe in the free agent waters. Not so much. They were very, very, very conservative in the free agent waters. The big free agent signings that they made, July 1, Paul Martin, Joel Ward, Mikhail Bodker. They didn't really go all in and sacrifice and mortgage the future for free agent signings. And you have to applaud Doug Wilson for that. And I think that was the going trend back in the day, where GMs were not willing to dole out huge long-term deals with big money for kind of an unknown like they are now. I feel like the players hold a lot of the power now, especially the young guys, where you just go, 8 years, $7 million. Well, you've only played 65 games. I know. That's what I want. Because that's what he got. That's what he got. That's what that guy got. And it wasn't like that 20 years ago. And that's okay. You know, things change. So you get Joe Thornton. You get all these free agents. You're constantly vying for the Stanley Cup. You're going. And this is where things get tricky, because when you get so close and you are so just focused on one goal, which is what you should be. You should be focused on winning the Stanley Cup. And you get right there, conference finals. You lose in game 7. Oh, you're right there. How does that happen? It's hard to take a step back and go, well, maybe we should not keep pushing, because we are really going to ruin our franchise moving forward. And this is the issue with a lot of these, not an issue. It's just the way of the game. You play the game, there's going to be consequences. When you get so close and you're so good for so long, you can't maintain that. It's hard to sustain success for a prolonged period of time. Great GMs know how to navigate that. Great GMs can look at their roster and they go, you know, how much longer can I get out of this group? When do I need to maybe pull back and start trading guys? When do I need to just retool? I think Doug Wilson, this is the one moment where he really kind of blew it. There was a moment in the late 2000 teens. I don't know what you call them. It was 13, 14, 15. They were really vying for the Stanley Cup. 16, 17. I think things went sideways once they lost the Stanley Cup final. They had a stacked roster. You brought in Evander Kane. You had Brendan Dillon. You got Martin Jones. You had Mike Hoffman. You had Erik Karlsson. You had all these, just Brent Burns. You had all of these stars. And what happens when you're on a successful team and you have stars you have to re-sign them. And this is where they get into trouble. It wasn't in free agency. It wasn't with the trades. It was re-signing the current players on their roster. And the philosophy changed, I want to say, around 2016. You know, in 2013, they signed Pavelski. 5 years, $30 million. Good deal. 2014, you signed Patty Marleau. 3 years, only three, for $20 million. Jumbo, the same year. 3 years, $20.25 million. So you can see a trend. 5 years, 3 years, 3 years. Marleau and Jumbo at that time were like 33, 34. So they were getting a little older. Pavelski was younger. They gave him a five-year deal. Justin Braun, five-year deal. Good young defenseman. So the max was five. And these are their best players, you guys. These aren't just like, you know, third, fourth line guys, five, six defensemen. These are their best players that they're only giving 3 and 5 year deals to. There's no 8 year deals for $8 million. There's no 7 year deals. And this is the era of Moneyball. You're spending money. It was not uncommon to see $8 million contracts at that time, $9 million contracts. They wouldn't do it. If they wanted to give out money, it was an three-year contract. $8 million, 3 year contract. That's it. They're not going to go long term to sacrifice the future for today. And it was great. But you can't keep doing that. And this is the time where, like I said, I feel like Doug, he made a mistake. So in 2016, Brent Burns, obviously you get him from the Minnesota Wild, big trade. You give up your prospect, Charlie Coyle. You bring in Brent Burns, and he just takes off. Norris candidate every single year, all-star defenseman, just a fantastic player, an offensive threat, a dynamo. Just he still plays today. He's up for a new contract. Well, he's going to want some term, and he's going to want some money, and he wants to put down roots here. And so the max contract you can have is 8 years. So he wants 8 years. $8 million, $64 million. I think that's a good contract. 2 years later, Mark-Edward Vlasic, free agent. Well, he sees Burns, he got 8 years. He wants 8 years. You know, gold medal winner for Team Canada. One of the best all-around defensemen in the game. 8 years, $56 million. The very next year, Logan Couture. Well, if Burns, he got eight. Vlasic got eight. I want eight. Good young forward. Want to build your team around him. 8 years, $64 million. That same offseason. Erik Karlsson. You made a big trade for him the year before. Got him from Ottawa. Gave up a lot of assets. Good young players. You want to keep him? 8 years, $92 million. Erik Karlsson. Also that same offseason. Timo Meier. Good young forward. You want to keep him? More of a bridge deal. Get him to an RFA. 4 years, $24 million. I like that one. So all you're seeing a change in philosophy. Going from 3 to 5 year deals to 8 years always. Everybody's 8 years. Burns, Vlasic, Couture, Karlsson. Hurdle got an 8 year, $65 million contract the next year. These deals are great if you are building towards something. These deals are not great when you've already had that success and you're trying to maintain, you're trying to get better. You haven't won the Stanley Cup yet. You are regressing in a certain extent. You need to get better. There are better teams in the West. And this is where I feel like they made a huge mistake. Those last seven deals ruined this franchise for the next 10 years after that. They had a decision to make in 2018. They just lost to the Knights in the second round. They were an older team. Not a lot of prospects because when you're contending, you trade all your draft picks away. So the cupboard was bare. But they had a lot of good young roster players. You had Hurdle, who was 24. Tierney, 23. Kevin LeBanc, who was 22, who was coming into his own. Timo Meier, like I just mentioned, 21. Jonas Donskoy. Forget about him. He's 25. A good scorer from Finland. Dylan DeMello, Barclay Goodrow, good role players. They were all in the current roster. You could have built around those guys. You have Pavelski, though. He's 33. One of the best goal scorers in the league. You had Burnsy, who was 32, you guys. You had Braun, 30. Vlasic, 30. Ward, 37. Hansen was 31. And then, of course, Jumbo and Marleau. Instead of just regrouping around that young core and keeping a couple vets, Pavelski, Burns, Vlasic, you just go all in and you re-sign everybody to long-term deals. And then there's no wiggle room after that. Once you sign those older guys to long-term deals, when the younger guys want deals, the money's not there. Once a Brent Burns hits 35, 36, or a Vlasic hits 35, 36, they're not as good as they used to be. It's those deals that crippled this team. And it was the thing you had to do to compete. That's what you needed to do to continue to win. If I'm Doug Wilson, do I really break down this team that lost in the Stanley Cup Finals 2 years ago? I think you have to. I think once you give out the deals to Couture and Carlson, that's it. You made your bed. You're done. They did not make the playoffs again once they gave those guys those deals. Bad contracts. Other teams were younger, talented, getting better. The next 6 years after those deals were signed, they finished no higher than six in the Pacific. They did not have a winning record. This is the finicky game the GMs have. When do I retool? When do I rebuild? When do I break it down and start again? Which vets do I trade? How do I navigate this team to keep them successful? It's just very, very hard to do. So fast forward to now, they were forced into a rebuild, and they didn't want to. This was the worst possible place to be for a rebuild. Missed the playoffs. A ton of bad contracts. Burns turned into a terrible contract. Vlasic, an atrocious contract. He just got bought out this offseason. You had Carlson, who was making a boatload of money, who was just terrible on the back end. You had Couture in and out of the lineup. And then to a certain extent, Thomas Hertl. He was your one shining star, but he's just surrounded by aging old guys. They had no elite prospects. They had no draft picks due to deadline trades. They had no rings to show for it. All their effort. Not one ring. So all this happened. Then you're looking for a new GM because obviously Doug Wilson had to go. He got them in this position. He was getting older. We need to get someone else in there. Enter Mike Greer. In July of 2022. First black GM, by the way. Big deal. Great hire. Smart guy. Obviously played in the NHL for years and years and years. He comes in and he looks at what he has. And you go, damn. Hey, what do? I don't have a lot of assets. I have all these guys on terrible contracts. Everybody knows I'm in a bad situation. So if I try to make a deal, they're going to take advantage of me. I have no prospects. What do I do? We're a losing team with nothing to look forward to. Usually if you're on a losing team, you can go, oh, I got some draft picks. I got some good young players. Or, we got a lot of cap space we can use next year. They didn't have any of that. They had no cap space, no prospects, nothing. Enter Mike Greer. My goodness. If there's an award for like best GM of the last 4 years, he would get the award, hands down. I know Bill Zito and Jim Neal and all these guys are getting accolades and this and that because they're winning Stanley Cups and making great deals. That's great. They're good GMs. But what Mike Greer has done in such a short period of time with these San Jose Sharks, mind you, this was 3 years ago, calendar years, July of 2022, and now it's July of 2025. 3 years. He has transformed this team from just the abyss of what do we do? There was such a huge unknown. They were just mired in a rebuild with all these terrible contracts. And he has turned them into one of the most exciting young teams that everybody's looking forward to see what they do in the next 4 years. Their prospects pool is deep. They're a destination for players who want to play with those good young players. It's exciting. He has franchise players scattered throughout the roster now. And I'll get to them in a second. But the first move that he made was trading fan favorite Brent Burns to the Hurricanes. That's it. It was a cap dump. Burns had, I think, 4 years left on his deal. You got a third rounder for him. And then Lorenz, who was a decent player. I think he plays for Toronto now. He was swapped for Anthony Duclair, who was good for the Sharks. He scored some goals. But it was a cap dump. But it's tough. You have to make tough decisions when you're GM, especially this is your first salvo as a GM and you're coming in and your first move is to trade a franchise favorite player in Brent Burns. Like this guy was beloved in the community. He's Burns' battalion. He did a lot. His family loved San Jose. Their house was epic. So you deal him. The next move, trading one of your young, promising prospects. Because this team's not going to compete. Why do I need a player like that? Why? Because Timo Meyer's deal was up soon. He was going to want a boatload of money. Do I want to really re-sign this guy long-term, even though I know we're going to be mired in a rebuild for quite a long time? His value would never be higher. He was getting tons of minutes, putting up great points. And so they trade him to the Devils the week before the deadline for Fabian Zetterlund, who, by the way, turned out to be a great player for the Sharks, and they flipped him to the Senators for a draft pick, a few other prospects, and a first-rounder. He was on Quinton Musty. He might get a shot this year. I don't know. He's a college kid. I don't know if he's going to pan out, but he could be good. All right, the next move he made, I've talked about this at length, this trade. Erik Karlsson, fresh off his Norris Trophy, 2023-2024. It still boggles my mind how Kyle Dubas and the Pittsburgh Penguins, how they signed off on this trade. How the owner and other people higher up, Mario Lemieux, didn't step in and go, What are you doing? Why are you making this trade? I said, and I still believe this, that Mike Greer was going to have to package a first rounder to get rid of Erik Karlsson. That's how bad I thought Erik Karlsson was at playing defense. And keep in mind, this also takes into account his just albatross of a contract. $92 million over 8 years. I think it was an $11 million contract. That's a lot of money for a defenseman who doesn't play defense. Yes, he puts up points, but boy, oh boy, is he just so bad in his own end. So Mike Greer managed to wine and dine Kyle Dubas and give him Erik Karlsson and his whole contract, his $92 million 8 year contract. He retained nothing of that deal. And you think that the Penguins would maybe give him like a fifth rounder, because you guys, cap space is such a commodity. It's so valuable. And if you're taking on a full cap of a guy who's, yes, he's fresh off of Norris, but he's older and he sucks at defense, and you're still for some reason taking on his full cap, and you have an aging team as it is with Crosby and Letang and Malkin and Rust and all these guys. And then you're giving San Jose a good prospect and Jan Ruda, a good forward in Mikael Granlin, a solid forward in Mike Hoffman, and a first rounder. You should just tar and feather. Like, the worst trade. We talk about how good the Joe Thornton trade was. This trade was equally as good for the San Jose Sharks. It's insane that Mike Greer made this trade. Oh, and by the way, that first rounder they got from the Pittsburgh Penguins, because shocker, Karlsson went to the Penguins and they did not take off. It wasn't like, oh, Stanley Cup bound. They sucked. They sucked so bad. They used that first round pick that they got from the Pittsburgh Penguins for Sam Dickinson. The kid will be a star defenseman in this league this year. And the Penguins could have had him. Imagine the Penguins, could they use a young defenseman? Probably, yeah. It's just a terrible trade. This trade and the Jumbo trade might go down as his all-time wins in all of history, in the history of trades. So he wasn't done there. You get rid of Karlsson. You get rid of Timo Meyer. You get rid of Brent Burns. Thomas Hertl had to go. You know, tough to trade this high caliber talent in his prime, but you're retooling. What good is Thomas Hertl to you on this roster? He is no good. And so the hard part about this is you trade him to your biggest rival. But when they're offering a first rounder, good prospects, you have to trade. You have to make that deal. And this is why I love Mike Greer, because he doesn't just settle. He doesn't just sit back and go, well, you know, we'll keep Thomas. He's a good player. No, he gets where the franchise is at. He's like, we are in a tough spot. We need to retool. Having Thomas Hertl on our roster, yeah, makes us better, but we won't win the Stanley Cup, you guys. So what good is he on our roster? Let's trade him. Even though it's to Vegas, short trip. Everybody hates Vegas and San Jose, but we're going to make this move to make our team better. And then, oh, by the way, other than these big trades, he's picking up guys off waivers, Jake Walman, trading them for first rounders to Edmonton. Like, he is doing all of this in such a short period of time, it makes your head spin. So those are the big trades he made. Yes, he was making other moves, but those are the big franchise altering moves that help just propel this once just dormant prospects pool, this cap constrained team, into one of the most exciting franchises that you can look forward to in the next 5 years. So you just rid yourself of all those just terrible contracts. You get prospects, you get draft picks. And what does he do with these draft picks? Well, in 2023, you get the fourth overall pick because you were terrible. You take Will Smith. Solid, young, skilled forward who's fun to watch. The next year, you get the number one overall pick. The ping pong balls fall your way. You get Macklin Celebrini. We know what he does. The guy's a stud. You also get Sam Dickinson. Thank you, Pittsburgh Penguins. 2025, you get the second overall pick. You get Michael Mesa. Arguably the most skilled player in the draft. Not arguably. He was. You get Joshua Ravensbergen, goaltender. Shore up that issue. And then obviously one of my favorite names in the league is Hauksi Wang. Get him right at the start of the second round. He's going to be a great player. So you have your franchise cornerstones already checked. You got Smith. You got Celebrini. You got Dickinson. You got Mesa. You got Ravensbergen on the back in goaltender. It's just, it works, you guys. And then he goes out and he surrounds him with good vets. You bring in a Tyler Toffoli. You get a Barclay Goodrow back, who's a two-time Stanley Cup champion. You go out and you get Ryan Reeves this offseason. Highly criticized. I think it's a great move. He makes $1 million. If he's not working out, you can bury him with the Barracuda. They're not going to be spending at the cap. You want someone to protect these guys. You go out and you get a Jeff Skinner. You overpay for him. But you want a veteran guy to be around these players. I think he's doing a great job. He took a team that had not even started their rebuild. They had a lot of big contracts, fan favorite contracts. He made tough decisions to let these players go. He again, mind you, he was no leverage at all. Everybody knew he was trying to just ship these contracts out. Everybody knew. Every GM, every president, every player. He was able to overcome that, collect a ton of assets. He was kickstarting their long rebuild into now a short rebuild to now they might be contenders in 2 or 3 years. He got the franchise cornerstones up front, on the back end, between the pipes. Their prospects pool is deep in all areas after years of losing. They are now in a spot to contend. Now, time will tell if this works out because we've heard this story before. You know, a struggling team, rebuilding, trying to figure out their way. Detroit Red Wings were in this situation too. They had the big, longest 25-year playoff run. Obviously, all those Hall of Famers. They retooled. You get a Larkin, you get a Sider, you get a Raymond. They flamed out. Remember how excited everybody was for Detroit years ago? Not so much anymore. Steve Yzerman has got his hands on this team and that team, and he's just like strangling it to death. That team sucks. Buffalo Sabres, same thing. They were great in the early 2000s. You know, Thomas Vanek, you had Derek Roy, you had Drury. It was an exciting team. Lost to the Stars in the Stanley Cup final, the controversial no goal by Brett Hull. Look at them now. Can't even find their footing. Throwing everything in the kitchen sink at it and still can't find the footing. But then there's successes. You'll get a Toronto Maple Leafs team. Went through a huge rebuild. What do we do? You got some young talent. Now they're successful. Edmonton Oilers, same thing. An awful franchise for years and years and years. They found their footing. So we'll see where the San Jose Sharks go. Only time will tell, but you have to applaud them for trying. Mike Greer is going out there. He's making moves. He's trying to win the Stanley Cup. He's trying to do it the right way. I get after GMs a lot by their bad moves. What the hell are we doing, you guys? Come on. When you see a GM that gets it, and he sees the bigger picture, and you have to applaud the owner for this because he's giving them, you know, some runway to work with. He's not saying, oh, you got 5 years. This is a long process to build a Stanley Cup champion. You can't just go out and make it happen overnight, especially with the cards that he was dealt in San Jose. So Mike Greer is doing a great job so far. They have good young talent. They have a ton of cap space. Only time will tell if they can parlay that into success. But I think the future is bright in San Jose. And I really appreciate everybody for listening. I think the future is bright here too. If you want me to change anything up, leave a comment. Send me an email at john@droppingthebook.com. Check us out on Patreon if you're not a member. We have a lot of fun there. I would appreciate the support if not. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll catch you next time. Cheers.